Good evening. You're listening to Comfest Radio, brought to you by Comfest Global Community Film Festival. This evening we have with us filmmaker Vladimir Bondarenko, and he'll be talking to us a bit about filmmaking and his experiences with life as a filmmaker. Good evening, Vladimir.
Hello, Sandy. Nice to see you after all these minutes.
Yeah. So, Vladimir, you were originally a teacher, and then you transitioned to a professional actor. How did that come about, that you are now a filmmaker?
Well, my careers as a teacher, professional actor, documentary filmmaker, and grief counselor and grief support group facilitator really began in 1959. That's when my whole life changed. I was in double digits. I was 10 or 11 years old. And I experienced grief at a fairly large scale. My favorite uncle died. My best friend drowned, and I didn't, in Lake Huron. My puppy was murdered by a gun. And Buddy Holly died. My hero, Buddy Holly. So at a very young age, I became shell-shocked with grief and wondering, where did these people go? Heaven or hell or purgatory, because I was raised Catholic. Okay. And I think that the rest of my life has always been, up until now, the creative management of my fear and fascination with death. And that has led me to my four careers that I juggle almost every day, the ones I just mentioned. And through the 60s, I was in several rock and roll bands, singing Buddy Holly songs, because Buddy was... he was the man, and I lost a family member, if you like, because I idolized him. And heroes are important in our lives. And then I, after being a rock and roller, I decided to become a teacher because I saw the film To Sir With Love with Sidney Poitier and how he went into that school in London, England, and changed the lives of all those kids. And I wanted to be like Sidney Poitier. And again, always in the back of my mind, how do I deal with my feelings about death and start to live my life? So I really wanted to help other people. So teaching became the pathway for me. And I taught school and junior high school in Cambridge in Kitchener, Ontario. Hello to all you Kitchenerites out there and Cambridgeites. So I taught school for 5 years, junior high school, and grade 7, 8, 9, 10. And again, I was always still playing in rock and roll bands, even while I was a teacher. I still wanted to keep that connection with music, the power of music, the power of Buddy Holly's music, the power of film. You know, a film like The Sir With Love changed my life. So I was always conscious of the power of the arts to creatively, therapeutically deal with those four or five losses I experienced as a child, basically, and the residual guilt I felt for not drowning, because my best friend did drown, I didn't. So I was hanging on to a lot of stuff. So my career started as a teacher, and then I said to myself, well, you know, I'd love to be an actor. I'd love to experience being an actor, because while I was teaching, I also did a lot of amateur theater. I had roles in musical stage plays, and I got hooked on acting. I got hooked on being on stage and the intoxicating feeling you have when you hear the applause. I mean, it's like, it's heroin, right? When you hear that applause, it's like, whoa, I'm here, I'm alive, I matter to people. So I worked as an actor. I went to New York to study at the Herbert Berghoff Studio in Greenwich. I met many actors who now are famous. They were then just like myself, just sitting in, you know, being in a room with other actors.
Name a few.
Hanging out. Well, Sigourney Weaver. You know, she was in there somewhere, and I don't want to, you know.
You don't want to name drop.
I don't want to name drop, but yeah, Sigourney Weaver, and a number of people who are now. It may mean even Al Pacino still goes to acting classes. You walk into a little class, there's Al sitting in the back of the room, you know, and that happened then too. He walked in. He was doing The Godfather then, you know. He still wanted to learn about acting. So, teaching. Professional acting. I became a professional actor at Stratford. I went to Stratford Festival to study, not to study, but to do Shakespeare. This is where I want to get a really important point across, is hang on to your dream. You know, I left teaching and alienated practically all my family members. A relationship ended because I decided to go to Toronto from Kitchener, the big city, Hogtown, you know, and become an actor. And then I went to Stratford. And if anyone had told me when I was a teacher that in 5 years I would become a professional actor and then a documentary filmmaker and then a grief counselor, I'd say, well, buddy, maybe in the next lifetime, you know, but not this time. I want to be a teacher, get my pension. Maybe I'll be a filmmaker at 50. It's cool. You're still young, right? Okay. But it happened. You know, I went from teaching to professional acting, and I did a lot of professional acting in Toronto and across the country, in theaters. I worked in commercials. In fact, in the 80s, I did a lot of TV commercials, and my agent said that she's had calls from commercial companies saying, can Vladimir Bondarenko do the next TV commercial for us? And she said, well, no, he's not available that day. When they, and then they said, well, do you have the Vladimir Bondarenko type? which wow. was like, I mean, I finally arrived. You know, like, we want the Robert Redford type, we want the George Clooney type. You know, suddenly I became a type, which was really cool. You know,
you have arrived.
I've arrived, baby. I've arrived, and oh, hallelujah! I'm telling you, it was a great feeling. But those feelings don't last.
No.
As an actor, you might, you know, 2% of actors make a living. And I did a lot of part-time work, you know, serving beer and all that. Then actors do anything to stay alive. But I, going back to Stratford, where I learned a lot about stage acting from Robin Phillips and Maggie Smith, my first, oh my God, this is something else. My first role at Stratford in 1976 was doing a 5-minute scene. And Antony and Cleopatra with Maggie Smith. I mean, I've seen the prime of Miss Jean Brodie, you know, and she was so good in that, and she's a fabulous actress. And I couldn't believe it that Robin Phillips, the director of Stratford, gave me, a fledgling actor, I was 28 years old at the time, knew nothing about, I mean, I studied in New York, but you need a lot, you need a lifetime of experience and training. But I had a 5-minute scene where I tried to woo Cleopatra, Maggie Smith, back to Caesar. I was the messenger, Theseus. Small role, but an important one, because I was on stage with Maggie Smith for 5 minutes. My parents were in the audience. I've arrived, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they were proud, finally. They came back to me. I didn't come back. They came back to me because I believed in my dream. I wanted to be an actor. There I'm a Stratford, Maggie Smith. We did that show 65 times, right? At Stratford, you do it the whole season. So you do the same show 65 times, afternoons, evenings. And often I would say to Maggie, well, Maggie, how do you want me to play it tonight? How do you want me to woo you back? She said, oh, Vlad, seduce me. And I said, I will, Maggie. I will seduce you on stage. I will. So that, you know, and then...
In that tone.
Yes. Yeah, because we were backstage in the wings, as they call them, ready to go on. And I had to keep it fresh. It was just a five-minute scene, but one night I do it as a seducer, as Maggie wanted. The next night she said, what's it tonight, Vlad? I said, well, I'm going to be a businessman. All right, I like that, she said. Then I delivered the lines as a businessman, as a playboy, as a farmer who wanted, you know, some help with his fields. I did anything I could to keep it fresh because we didn't want to do the same every night. You know? So Maggie Smith taught me a lot about acting. And now, of course, she's a big hit in Downton Abbey, you know, and mm-hmm. she's the big star now. I mean, she's in her 80s almost. What a woman. Very private. Anyway, so I learned a lot at Stratford. Then I came back to Toronto in the 80s. I did a lot of television series, commercials like crazy. Made a living at acting. Can you believe it? I made a living at acting with no part-time job.
Can you imagine?
That was a dream. That was a dream come true. If you can be a working actor, hey, forget the Oscar. You've arrived.
And how long did that last?
Professionally, I'm still working as an actor. But I worked from 76 to about 91. So a good, 15 years?
That's a long stretch for an actor.
15 years as an actor. Some part-time work. And I'm not exactly a household word. You know, Elvis, the Beatles, Vladimir. No, it's not going to work. I'm not a household word yet. So I have some time left. So, and then... I went back in my mind to 1959, and I said to myself, you know, acting is great. I love doing it, but there's not enough work. There are dry spells. There's a year can go by, there's no auditioning, there's no work. How do you stay alive?
Bills to pay, you want to eat, dress.
You can't live on love either.
No.
Sandy, you can't.
No.
There's not enough calories. You know? Yeah. So... I thought, okay, I'm still not over those deaths in 1959. So I started taking some grief counseling and bereavement courses for about 10 years. And I finally accumulated enough credits to become a grief counselor. And now I do grief counseling and grief support group facilitating part-time. Sometimes for months go by, I don't have any clients, but I still keep my finger in that area because for me, again, to work out my own grief by helping others, the wounded healer, right?
Right.
The wounded healer. So I've gone from that. And that has given me probably the greatest joy is to help someone else with life and get through that raw, the most raw emotion there is. And from that, I became a documentary filmmaker after my acting. I thought, well, I'm going to put acting on hold in the early 90s. So I studied grief counseling and I became a documentary filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
I knew nothing about documentary filmmaking. Nothing. But
what
I had
the
stories.
First one?
The first one was a two-part series on children and adults who stutter. And I stuttered as a child. That's another reason why I went into rock and roll, because when you sing, you don't stutter. So, stuttered as a child, and I wanted to revisit that period of my life where I stuttered moderately. It wasn't a severe stutter. It was a moderate stutter, but enough to keep me off the social life scale, didn't have many dates, had pimples, stuttered, you know, you're not cool. But if you sang in a rock band, you were cool. So my first two documentaries were films about people, children, and adults who stutter. And they allowed me to work out my own loss about speech.
We're listening to Confess Radio, brought to you by Confess Community Film Festival. I'm your host, Sandy DeFreitas, and we're here with Vladimir Bondarenko. So continue on with your speech.
Yes. Well, basically going from teaching to professional acting to documentary filmmaking, and then grief counseling and studying bereavement and those stages of grief really gave me a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge to help others, not only in grief, but also in my documentary storytelling, because documentary filmmaking is storytelling. And as I mentioned before, our first two films, I mean our, my company, first two films were about children and adults who stutter. Speaking of Courage was the one about children, and The Adults was Voices to Remember. And they're still selling, would you believe it? You know, they're still out there helping others. And one of the great stories that happened from Speaking of Courage, which is about children who stutter, is that I got a phone call in 1995 around 1 o'clock in the morning. I forgot to turn my ringer off. Had an audition the next morning, still working as an actor. I says, hello. And somebody says, hi, my name's Jack, and I'm calling from North Carolina. And I said, okay, Jack, it's nice of you to call, but you know what time it is? He says, yep, it's about 1 o'clock down here. I said, that's right, Jack. And I'm not quite asleep yet, and I have an important meeting tomorrow. So he says, well, I just want to tell you that I really enjoyed your film, Speaking of Courage. In fact, I'm going to make a donation to Duke University, which helps kids who stutter. I said, that's wonderful, Jack. I love to hear that. Let's talk tomorrow. Can you call me at 10 o'clock in the morning? That's fine. Thanks very much. Hung up. 10 o'clock next morning. Howdy. My name is Jack. So, I talked to Jack.
And this is Jack who?
Well, I'm not going to say his last name because I find out that Jack made a donation to the Duke University Stuttering for Children Department for $1 million.
Wouldn't be Jack Nicholson, would it?
No. That wouldn't be Jack Nicholson. No, no, no. And can you imagine the power of a film to inspire and motivate someone's compassion
right.
for children who stutter
mm-hmm.
to donate $1 million?
Mm-hmm.
I found out that Jack, whoever, is one of the top 10 millionaires in the U.S.
That's amazing.
Then I said, you know, Jack, I have another project I'm working on.
Jack hung up.
Yeah, no. Jack stayed with me, but I wasn't that much of a greedy soul, and I accepted, and Duke University flew us down, because it wasn't for the film and the filmmakers, they wouldn't have $1 million. It wasn't for Jack. They wouldn't have $1 million and to start this wonderful department to help kids who stutter, who were in my shoes as well.
Now, this film, it's a Canadian film. It was made in Canada. How did somebody from that part of the world get to see this film?
It was on PBS.
Really?
Yeah, it was
That's
on
PBS. It's an amazing channel.
It was a great channel, and what a wonderful privilege for us to be broadcast on.
I want to talk to you about Voices to Remember.
Yeah.
Because Voices to Remember is about a few teenagers who went missing in the Lake of Ontario. Is that right?
That's Vigil of Hope.
Oh, it's Vigil of Hope.
Yeah.
Now, the reason I'm asking you that question, because it seems to tie into your background, that type of tragedy.
It does. After I finished the two films on people who stutter, people who live with a stutter, I thought, what's my next project? I picked up the newspaper and I saw a picture, black and white, on the Toronto Star of six mothers with their backs to us sitting on Lake Ontario on the edge of the beach looking out at the lake. And it said, six boys drowned. And that picture moved me so much that they had that hope. Where are my sons? And it was about grief. Right, which is right up my alley. I needed to work out and help others. So I said, this is my next film, Vigil of Hope. And I contacted the families and got their trust that I was going to make a film that told the story accurately, with sensitivity, as much as I could. I showed them the stuttering films, and they liked that. Had to win their trust. That was important. that I'm not just coming in with guerrilla filmmaking and saying, oh, so your son died, tell me about it. You know, it's not about that. It's about getting their trust and helping each other with the project that was therapeutic for them, too, is to tell the story.
Yeah, I remember the film because you screened it at the very first ConFest, and that wonderful family was there. And I remember how they were so so appreciative of you and the way you handled the whole subject.
Yeah. Yeah, when they watched the film for the first time, and then they stood up and gave us a standing ovation. This was at the National Film Board. We showed it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
It validated that our interpretation of that tragedy was a gift to them.
Right.
Yeah, and they gave us a gift as well, the gift that they actually talked about. You know, if someone came to my door, if a documentary filmmaker came to my door and said, hey, your son just died, I want to make a film on that, I'd say, well, go away. You know, I'm in grief.
Did it give you any sense of relief from the guilt you felt when your best friend died? He also drowned, right?
He did. That's a very good question to ask. It actually did. It was therapeutic for me because I revisited my own past to the art of filmmaking, which is a wonderful pathway to take. It sure beats paying thousands of dollars for counseling, even though I probably needed it. But if you can make meaning of your life through the arts, which is the only way, I think, creatively to deal with your problems, one way. But yes, it helped me. That film, which I think was probably the deepest film I ever did in documentary, is to explore the raw grief of those parents. And then still stay in touch with them, because in documentary, it's different from making a feature where everybody gets paid, you know, and you're on set for maybe 1 day to 5 days to 2 weeks, and you say bye-bye, never see those people again. But in documentary, you stay with them over months.
Right.
Documentaries aren't made in 2 days.
No.
So, in fact, Vigil of Hope took 2 years to make.
Wow.
To shoot, to post-production, the editing, sound, all that. It was definitely a labor of love. But for me, my greatest moment was when the parents stood up and after watching a film where their children have died and to have the energy alone, the energy, mm-hmm. if not the will to stand up and give us a standing ovation, That probably was the greatest moment of my life.
Probably brought them some closure. At least they felt more connected.
Yeah, they did. We were all crying and hugging each other, and it was just an epiphany. I mean, it was just the highest accolade. That was for me, that moment validated that we did a good job, that we told the story as they would have wanted to see it, and not it was very restrained. And it's still out there, Vigil of Hope. It's out on the market, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just now they celebrated the 18th anniversary of that tragedy, which happened in 1995. There was an article in the Toronto Star about it. And I may revisit it we're thinking about doing a sequel, but we're not sure. We just have to see how it goes, because everybody went in different directions after.
Were their bodies ever discovered?
Did never.
Ever find? So
the bodies were never discovered. No boats. There were two boats. One a big boat, one a smaller one. No boats, no bodies. It's still a mystery. But the boys are gone, and the parents carry on. And in different ways. People grieve differently, as we know. And some of the families have stayed near the lake. And they look at the lake, that's where their boys are. Other families have left the province even. They've moved away.
Mm-hmm.
They can't stand, they hate the lake.
Right.
So that's how diverse and extreme grief is. So grief, my own grief has made me a better teacher. I still teach now. I teach part-time at Toronto Academy of Acting.
Mm-hmm.
We have a part-time and full-time course. I teach the business of acting, and I teach acting for the camera. So I've started as a teacher, once a teacher, always a teacher, right? And I'm still teaching. Even when I direct, I'm teaching. I'm learning, teaching and learning. You know, why are we here? Mm-hmm. Why are we on this planet? What do you think?
Mm-hmm. You're asking me?
Yeah.
I have no idea. I'm still trying to figure that one out.
Well, I think it's to learn. Mm-hmm. I think that's the umbrella word. Underneath it's to love, you know, to have a career, to have a family, maybe, you know, to be successful or not, to have friends, to make meaning of your life, but to learn. I think to learn is the key word. So those films I've made have gone on to win Gemini nominations, mm-hmm. and be broadcast around the world, all three films, the two Stuttering and the one with Grief. And again, I remember earlier on when I was writing, speaking of courage, I thought to myself, what is the title of this film? Well, I didn't have a title for it. The TVO was about to air it. And I got on a bus, and this is serendipity. I got on a bus in Toronto, and I was sitting behind these elderly ladies. They were in their 80s. I figured they were a little older than me. And they were talking about someone else. And the one lady said, speaking of Blanche, I thought, speaking of courage, that's my title. I said, thank you. They didn't know what, I dashed off the bus. I called TVO. I said, speaking of courage, that's the title. I said, thanks, Vlad, because we didn't have a title until we're going on air tomorrow night. So speaking of courage, right? And speaking of courage maybe is the theme for this interview I'm doing, because it takes a lot of courage to follow your dream, right?
Right.
It does. Because there's resistance and there's tough times. I can just pass on, because my religion is passing it on. Mm-hmm. That's my religion, called pass it on.
Right.
I pass it on. People pass it on to me. I pass it on to everybody who's listening. Is that the road is long. The road is tough. And if you can make meaning of your life, that's important. I think making meaning is far more important and doable than happiness.
That I definitely
happiness
agree with.
Is short-lived. Yeah. It lasts, 5 seconds maybe. Mm-hmm. You're happy for
10 minutes and you're off again.
Then you're off in the rut. Mm-hmm. You're lost in the rut. So making meaning, I think, is the important thing. And making meaning of your grief as well.
Right.
You know, creatively, artistically, that's the gift. If we can do it, and not everybody can, but if you're lucky enough to have a creative, we all have a sense of poetry, a sense of, you know, so my only thought I want to pass on is, speaking of courage, it takes a lot of courage to do what you really want to do in life. Mm-hmm. I've been blessed. I've been truly blessed, and that is my gift. I've been blessed.
We just have a few seconds left. What advice would you give to upcoming filmmakers?
Stay out of your own way.
Okay, we'll leave you with that last word. You've been listening to Confess Radio, brought to you by Confess Global Community Film Festival. For more information about our festival, please visit our website at www.confess.com. That's CommFest.com. I'd like to thank Vladimir Bondarenko for coming at the last moment and sharing his words of wisdom with us, and hope he'll come back again. Have a good evening.
I was off on a tangent.